Welcome to the Nui Tech People podcast. My name is James McDonald. I spend my days interviewing some of the most innovative people working in the tech industry and hear some amazing stories. Each fortnight, we release a new episode sharing these conversations. This podcast aims to showcase the tech projects happening right here in Newcastle, provide key resources to help you grow your tech career, and share insights into the future of the Newcastle tech scene. Hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to another episode of the Nui Tech People podcast. In today's episode, we'll be sharing advice our guests will give to those wanting to start a career in technology. From educational pathways to resources that they have used and what they might change if they had the opportunity to start over again. Hope you enjoy this episode. From episode 55, Prue Killick.
Yes. So I guess that was one of my next questions around sort of, you know, what initiatives are you looking at to firstly attract and retain, but also sort of engage talent through the recruitment and onboarding process?
Yeah, so we've been fortunate to connect with the Newcastle University and be able to work on some really significant projects for us around artificial intelligence. So that will see a group of our tech team and a group of the university's tech team work together on some of those initiatives that, you know, working on something that's exciting, that's, you know, pioneering, all of those types of things help retain, obviously, our amazing talent that we have at Pegasus. Mm-hmm. But there's other things where we know we have to contribute to the local community when it comes to talent engagement from a very young age as well. So we engage with MEGT for Cert 3 ICT traineeships. So Fantastic. We've got five trainees at the moment. So
excellent.
Yeah, it's one of those, I think there's a stigma still around that as well when it comes to trainees in the workplace. And although we can have a good balance of graduates coming out of university, you know, three of the trainees had completed semesters of university and were missing that hands-on component that really
that they were passionate about. And traineeships can give you,
Yeah, so we were able to bring them in. They've been on the job and working through on the job with us, which has been fantastic. And they're really thriving in the environment. They've got the technical know-how. They understand the customer component of what a software as a service platform needs to produce and needs to provide. So that's been really, really beneficial. So we'll definitely continue with that program.
That's excellent. And that's quite a large number of trainees for a company your size.
Yeah.
So that's a great effort.
It's really important to us. I think, you know, we have to contribute to both ends of the talent spectrum. You can't just hog all the good stuff right at the top. You've got to be able to bring people along on that journey and engage and build up through, you know, and we're unique, I think, we own and develop our own software. We have everything in-house from sales through to marketing, through to BI, BA, QA, all of the components that makes the software cycle. So, and the sales to service cycle. So there's opportunities when you come in and start with us to really go, I get what you do here and I like what that person does and I'd like to do more of what they do. So with our traineeships, we do tours of duty and they get pockets of time in different teams to understand what it is that those tech pockets are and then decide if that's what they like, if they don't like it. We're not offended, like it's okay.
Yeah, and I think it's good for them to have a holistic view of a company and its operations as well. It's really stands them in good stead when they're, you know, applying for future positions.
Yeah, definitely. Another program that we're engaged in is the HSC Smart Track, and that program has been enabling, there's a new process, I guess, for the HSC Smart Track students, which is what would have been considered maybe the old work experience and TAFE day.
Yeah.
They've remodeled it a little bit more and it enables an employer to have a student for longer periods of time throughout the week rather than maybe a block period or one day a week. And you're getting students that have really thought and committed to their vocational training. So we have a young guy called Jordan who's studying aviation, and he's coming to our tech support team and is helping with hardware and all sorts of things.
So this is in year 11 that they start?
Yes, year 11 and 12. It's an alternative, end for the HSC.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And then we've got two young students from the media and production team that are coming in to do a little bit of a bio on Jordan and a bio on Pegasus and use that as support material for the HSC Smart Track program moving forward that the school can use and we can help promote.
Yeah.
But they're so enthusiastic. They're so engaged. Yeah. And they really want to, you know, have that opportunity. The beauty of the subjects, I guess, that are being offered is there's lots of, you know, not just Pegasus, there's lots of recruiters, there's lots of employment opportunities in Newcastle. And I think if businesses leaned into it a little bit more and could see that supporting these types of programs early can really help with that long-term, you know, talent pipeline and understand, you know, let's give these students a really great experience in these vocations so that they're passionate and they're engaged and they want to keep contributing locally and in the local market.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, that's a great initiative.
From episode 56, Jodie Stapleton.
So one thing I'll say is higher education is really important and you should do it. It's a gate opener now. You have to do it and the way that the world is working. But doing an internship or having work experience is also equally important. So I
believe so as well. Yeah. I strongly believe that.
I think see that in a lot of your candidates you're getting through.
You can tell the difference between people that have had some real life exposure to, you know, the ones that have just sort of stayed on at university and not tried to, you know, get some experience in their vocation of choice.
Yeah. So I had the Canadian government ran a internship program. And so they would go for the summer because you have a long time, you have 4 months off in Canada in the summer for your, between your next uni year.
Wow. How nice is that?
Yeah. So you, in the beginning of May, so they start the recruitment in April and they would hire interns for all the different cadetships for all the different government departments. So I got one with the Department of Justice. And I think that was really enabled me to leverage my education and quickly into a career post because I had 3 years of solid working, real life work experience to accompany my degree at the end of the day. So
yeah, fantastic. That's probably the number one piece of advice you would give to students and graduates wanting to start a career in technology. Is there anything else, any other insights that you want to share, any certain pathways? You know, obviously we're seeing a lot more different types of roles being created now than probably when, you know, we went to university. Is there anything else that you would like to add?
When you think about talking to a lot of girls and saying, do you want to get into tech? And I think they think of it as it's a developer's field only. So I have to be a computer engineer in order to get into that field. But I think the breadth of roles they have currently are really suited, equally suited to women and equally suited to men. And it's about understanding technology. And our kids are technical literate. They're coming out of school completely technical literate, far, far exceeding what we were when we were coming out. So having that technical literacy, having a set of soft skills and hard skills is applicable in all these different roles. When you think about scrum masters and product owners and lean coaches, it's people who understand technology, but they understand the psychology of people also, and they're able to apply that to get the best outcomes.
Yeah, good.
From episode 57, Glendon Franklin Brown. Obviously, having technology and the fact you're a tinker on a CV getting your first job, I think that's a great story. I think that's something a lot of people can learn from, especially grads. A grad certificate's probably not enough these days for a lot of roles. It's a certificate plus what else have you done? Have you built something on the side? What else have you done, built or played with? So you show you've got a genuine interest in that. So I think that's a really good lesson for definitely young tech professionals.
Yeah.
But the part I found like really, I guess, interesting right there is you actually taking the proactive approach to approach counsel for your for that role. You mentioned, you know, it's a sign of confidence or a sign of, you know, having the confidence to actually go and do that. For people that might not be as bold, might not be as confident, any advice you would provide others to approach a company that they may be interested in working for?
Yep. you know, when, as you were saying that, I was thinking, well, you know, obviously young professionals in whatever vocation they choose need to be too careful. They're not trying to shoehorn themselves into a role that they would like to have, but really they're not suited for. And if you're shoehorning yourself into an IT management strategy role, but you're not very good at the charisma and the communication things, it's about understanding, you know, where your strengths and weaknesses are. So if you go for a software engineering role, probably the person that's interviewing you will also be a software engineer or have a good understanding of that. So you can just talk shop. And I listen to the guys that interview engineers at Diamond and they say, yeah, that guy knew what he was talking about. Like, he may not have the best personality in the world, but he is the right candidate because he knows exactly what he's talking about. And when he's got a really tricky problem to solve, he'll fix it. And then I'll tell the customer how he fixed it, you know, that sort of stuff. So my advice to young professionals nowadays is really try and understand where you sit. Don't worry too much about the money or the prestige or what have you, unless that's where you sit, but really understand what your strengths and weaknesses are and sort of play to those strengths.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
No, I don't disagree. I think the part you mentioned there is a bit of self-awareness, right?
Yep.
Understanding sort of where you sit, having a little bit of self-awareness, which is not, it's definitely a learned skill.
Mm.
And then the other part is probably understanding your audience, right? Understanding yep. who you're talking to, who you're going to try to pitch yourself to.
Yep.
From episode 58, Nathan, hook away.
Yeah. And what advice would you give to students wanting to start a career in marketing or digital?
Yeah, digital marketing in particular, the curriculum's still pretty light at the uni. It's changing rapidly, but it's still pretty traditional. So I'd still say focus on traditional marketing. So everyone within our team at Zimple is a marketer first, and then we span off into our yeah. sort of...
You need the foundation and the fundamentals
yeah.
first, and yeah. that's just different, applying it across different channels.
Different platforms. I mean, if you specialization is still recommended, like you can yeah. still need to...
So like SEO or...
Yeah, SEO, SEM, social media, content yeah. production. There's a whole range of areas that you go into, but the output of those particular skills are only as good as the strategic thought that's gone into producing them.
Yes.
So, yeah, we always try and take a strategy-led approach based on objectives and then back that up with skills. So, yeah, anyone looking to start a career in digital, I'd say focus predominantly on the soft skills. So thinking, listening, being able to synthesize information and then put it onto paper and then, yeah, have your backup in the tactical execution of that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And market research, obviously, because that's yeah. key if you're
exactly.
going to be helping your clients grow their businesses.
Yeah.
From episode 59, Mitch Brindle. On that note, mate, yeah, I know you're not a big, you know, podcast reading books perspective. That's not how you go about your education, mate. How do you keep up to date?
Honestly, it's stuff like this. Like it's talking to communities. It's this understanding what other businesses and what other people are at the same level-ish of their organization are doing. Obviously, being in the AWS Dev Cloud Alliance, that's fantastic. We're in a Slack together, so ask questions in there a lot. Talk to other colleagues as well, or other people in that community that are at similar organizations as NIB, so ones that are like in, you know, APRA regulated stuff, so that way we can talk around, well, in your cloud movement, you know, did you get kickback from this, or, you know, or blah, 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 right? You know,
yeah.
that kind of stuff. But with the educational point, I tend to really talk to probably people that are usually at NIB because it's the easy point, but those probably senior guys, it's kind of like making connections with the senior leadership management, kind of like that mentoring kind of approach, not official mentoring, right? But, you know, getting yeah. guidance and stuff, or, hey, I'm doing this thing and, you know, just, you know, if it's kind of down their path versus, you know, another head of or something like that, I'll kind of ask them for a bit of guidance and, oh, hey, can you like proofread this thing, or can you give me support? Which at NIB, that is something that is amazing. So, yeah, it's really just I kind of like to have have a knock myself.
No, mate, I really like that. I think there are some people, or there's a lot of people, right? Everyone goes about education in different ways, formal education, and then courses, short courses, then podcasts, books, yada, yada, yada. But, mate, the fact that you've gone about it from, like, I guess, unofficial mentoring and also communities, like building communities, building those networks and relationships, I really like that. I think it's a different approach to most people. Or people maybe have that as a minute part of their education, or maybe don't focus on the educational benefit of a network or building a network or community. But I really like that. I think it's a good point that people could really take a lot from.
100%. It's massive because, you know, you're not talking theoreticals.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking to people that have either been and done or doing. And we're in tech. This, you know, half the stuff's been done before. It's like, you know, don't beat yourself up trying to solo something. Like, you know, if you need any, and I'm not talking from like a technical perspective here, but from like a management perspective, there's so much knowledge out there from these people. And even if you look from like at a senior in terms of age, like, you know, they've been around longer, they've probably seen more things, they've been through more different changes, they've been through so much. It's like really look around, because also when you do read as well, I find that you can get like sometimes the context isn't there in terms of, well, what organization do you work for? But if, you know, you're looking for some sort of guidance here and now, talking to someone in your organization or in a similar organization to you, also, you know, they can give you guidance around, you know, what to do in this current situation. So therefore, it's not so much theoretical, it's more in the now.
From episode 60, Justin Bain. Woo! It's got children that are interested in either STEM or coding. Any advice?
Yeah, so there is a program that's running in Newcastle. It escapes me. Maybe we'll include it in the notes, whatever. But it has been recommended for entry level programming. But I think there's so much online now. I mean, you could sit down with your son or daughter on YouTube and find the right thing, and, you know, order a Raspberry Pi off eBay and start tinkering.
Yeah, yeah, nice. And then, mate, as they go through, like, I think Newcastle University is absolutely fantastic, and some of the people that are coming through there, I think the quality is fantastic. Outside of uni degrees, you mentioned people that are tinker with it in their own time. Is there any advice you give to people, or is it just straight up start playing?
Yeah, so start playing. Because we work in high voltage battery systems, I'd say I'd have to, you know, caveat that with safety.
Yeah.
But I think it's, you know, about networking with the right people that are, you know, have a head start in that space or have experience in that space, you know, finding yourself a good mentor or getting involved in programs that are already available.
Yeah, nice. I think that mentorship as well, you just made mention of that.
Yeah.
It's something that's definitely becoming more common, I think, as an advice piece, is find somebody that's been there, done that before, or somebody that you can learn off and lean on them. Have you had any strong mentors in your career to date?
Yeah, definitely. And I think you're right. You need to kind of wake yourself up every now and then and say, you know, I'm surrounded by, you know, these great people within the network. You know, why not reach out? I did that recently with a family friend who's based in New Zealand. You know, he's in the finance sector, and said, hey, you know, what do you think? And he said, oh, well, you need to speak to this person, do this. And that's kind of kicked off a whole new thing. And yeah, so certainly just having reaching out and seeing who you already got in your network that may be able to actually support you. And people, you know, people, if someone came to me and said, hey, Justin, I've seen you've done this in the military, you know, like, do you have any advice on this, you know, which people have, it's great to be able to impart some advice.
Yeah, I think that as well. I think most people don't understand the people that are being asked. If you go about it the right way, some people are short on time. Everyone's short on time, I guess, but most people will give their time and actually, you know, appreciate, you know, giving advice if somebody's taking that on board. So I think, you know, don't be afraid to ask.
Yeah.
From episode 61, Ryan Priest.
What advice would you give to young people wanting to start a career in technology?
I
went all in and just tried to learn and absorb as much as you could.
Stay focused with what you're passionate about. It's very easy to sort of maybe get distracted. There's so many different avenues now. Like, back when I was young, it was like, if you're going to get an IT, it was a pretty clear path in a lot of ways. It was, you know, you go do your Microsoft certs. I did all them, did my iTools certs, but it was very clear in the direction you could go. Now it's like you can be like a software dev, you can, you know, robotics, automation. Like, there's just so many different avenues.
Yeah.
And
machine learning engineer.
Yeah. And I think it's just all about just like being focused, like just find out where your passions are. Like you got to do this. You're going to do this for a long time. Like your career, unless you hit the jackpot, which I've been trying to do, the Powerball, come on, baby. but chances of you winning that are pretty low. So you have to have a backup plan, and that would be probably a career, I guess. Uh-huh. And in your career, you know, you've got to find what you're passionate about. Otherwise, you're just wasting everyone's, not only your time, you're wasting everyone's time.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're going to get bored. You're just going to keep jumping between. And then you're going to get to like the ripe old age where you go, why didn't I just follow what I thought was interesting? Or why didn't I just spend my days waking up and actually look forward to going to work? And I'm definitely at that point. I love going to work.
Yeah.
I love the people I work for. I love what we're doing. I think I'm very blessed in a lot of ways. I'm not a religious person, but I'm definitely feel like, you know, the opportunities that I've had has been a result of me probably being quite vocal about what I want to do, but also just like knowing that I'm interested in something and chasing that. So I guess my advice to newcomers and people coming to the market is don't rush it by all means. Don't think you have to have like this clear path of what you want to do, because you're probably not going to work it out for about 5 years into your career, right?
Yeah.
And that's normal. Like it's more than normal. In fact, I'd probably encourage it. Like dabble in a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
But once you find something that really excites you, go and master it. Like go and do the best you can at it, because it's only going to benefit you in the long run. And you've got to have an end game. And your end game is to retire and spend time with your family or you know, whatever it is.
I think there's just a lot of pressure on kids these days to have it figured out straight away.
I think that pressure is like always been there in some ways. It probably stems from both your parents and what the school expectations are and stuff. You do it, a lot of us did just go surfing during the day and don't worry about it. But look, don't take my advice and don't do that. Like
from episode 62, Daniel Cludet. Mate, while we're on the topic of education, I think is interesting topic for technology professionals. What used to be common and on every job advertisement was must have degree is changing and evolving. Education obviously has a place in society and university is a big part of that. Let's start with your experience. You've obviously done a couple of degrees now and gone back and then done different smaller courses as well to continue your education. I'd be keen to get your opinion on the value for, let's start with the value for university for your career.
Look, value of university is a funny one. It's very valuable for that checkbox where people require a degree. As you mentioned, it's less important these days, but a lot of roles still want you to have that little checkbox. Yeah, I've seen roles where they want the master's checkbox. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get the best candidate. It's just somebody who's had the time to do a master's degree. Personally, I really don't care if somebody's learnt themselves, they've done a degree, they haven't had time to have a degree. It's really about, can you get the outcomes and are you good at what you do and do you have the right attitude to learn and continue to develop yourself and move forward? So I think it's good that it's becoming less important as a requirement, but I think until the entire business world changes their mindset, there are still roles where it will be limiting if you don't have a degree, regardless of what that degree is.
Yeah, cool. You must have seen, I'm assuming, I'm making an assumption here, but you must have seen some value in it to obviously go back. I know you've done smaller courses with Charles Sturt University and also Harvard. Can you talk to me about, I guess, why you did that and then the value you got from that?
I do the short courses because they address a specific interest or a specific need. So if there's an area I do want to delve a little bit deeper into, the short courses are a good way to just go in and brush up that skill set. I also like looking at a lot of the certification streams because what it does, it gives you a good insight into industry best practice, standards, what other people are doing. So I don't see it as necessary. I think what you do in the workplace is much more important. The experience you gather from real world experience is more important. but it's also valuable to be conscious of what the industry is doing. And you know, if you go to a course and learn one thing, you've got your value for money out of that course. So it's just about staying relevant and understanding the trends. The problem with courses and a problem with degrees are they're designed for what to do in perfect world situations, and no company works in a perfect world situation. So the formal education aligned with an ability to use common sense, adapt, adjust, you know, change tact and approach when needed, will get you the right outcome. So it's a tool along with your other skill sets.
Yeah, I think one thing that's come up on the podcast in previous conversations is university teaching the ability to learn. And you made mention of it before, people coming into a role and being able to learn on the role and being able to adapt. Have you found that as a beneficial part to your education?
Look, I still remember when I started my first job, I had that oh shit moment because nothing that I learned in university was applicable to that job at all. And I had no on the job training. I got handed a 1,000-page book and say, here it is, go for it, which is probably not the best induction process either. But yeah, I believe over time, universities and formal education providers have understood that they need to work with industry better, and that may have changed. But there is still a bit of a disconnect between what you do learn and what you then need to apply in a job. And it's a combination of the two that are required.
Yeah, I personally, I know from University of Newcastle perspective, they make a lot of effort to integrate their education with industry.
From episode 63, Aaron and Will Toll.
As far as education is concerned, did you do the tertiary education route? Did you do self-guided, self-paced stuff?
I guess yeah.
Where did you build the skill set?
Well, I'm very much not a wood scientist, so yeah. for better or worse. But I actually went to Newcastle Uni, so I did joint comp sci and math. So I have enough of a background to be dangerous in the field that we're in. So yeah, look, and that's, you know, a nice thing about Newcastle is we've got the uni right here. It actually draws in, you know, a lot of people from the region. And yeah, look, I think that about when I finished my uni degree, I probably didn't have a very high opinion of it. And I started working for myself straight after it. So I've actually never had to show my degree or results to any potential employers.
Yep.
But I think it gives you a good theoretical grounding. Like a lot of the, again, I might be biased here, but a lot of the math kind of features, you know, languages come and go, techniques, packages, all that comes and goes. But a lot of the theory has, you know, it had already been around for 40 years when I did uni and hasn't changed in the 20 years since. So that kind of grounding. And as the computers and frameworks are doing a lot more for you, it actually becomes more important because, you know, you can have one line of code and it's like, you realize this is iterating over a list with a million things in it, like three different times in order to give you one value at the end. And an appreciation for that kind of comes with that degree. So on our tech team, I think at least on the programmer side, pretty much everyone has, you know, a comp sci or software engineering or, actually, we have a few who've actually done electrical engineering, and then
you've got a fair few mech guys in as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So on the hardware team and on our filter team as well, you know, mechatronics, as well as actually mechanical engineering as well. We love the mechatronics because it's a good combination of hardware and software, and it's. It's great to have those kind of people on the team as well because they bring in like a different perspective. They've done a lot more of the robotics side of things, and especially on the hardware side, it's good to have that depth there. But it is always interesting because then you get them starting to do software for one piece, and then we assimilate it into the software team pretty quickly and go, so you see where you did this, maybe we should do it this way. And but it's good because there's a lot of kind of cross-pollination then between those ones. So
yeah
you add anything on the uni side? Told.
You've
No, like I don't think I have much to add on the Newcastle uni side. I have very little experience with it. My degree is highly irrelevant to anything, pretty much. But like I've gained a lot of life experience through running my own construction business, working production and managing workflows, things like that. So,
well, you started at Cordell or Airsight as a junior dev. So how did you pick up that skill set?
Being roughly the same age as Aaron here, like this kind of grew up around me, or I became interested as internet became a thing. I remember like looking at the first websites in Notepad and trying to build things like that. And this kind of stayed with me. Like I did a bit of freelancing here and there. And at some point I realized, hey, this construction thing is super stressful. And there's a lot to running your own business other than doing the actual work. And there was a shortage of front-end developers in Stockholm where I live at the time. So, maybe I should do something where I will work a bit less and I will earn a bit more and I'll be a bit less stressed. So, yeah, I do a bit of study on my own time. And
how's that less stress thing working out?
Very well.
From episode 64, David Lynch.
So what advice would you give to young students wanting to start a career in technology? What paths would you recommend for them?
Yeah, sure. So look, the TAFEs and universities do great programs and give you the basics definitely around networking. But I suppose, you know, my advice would be try and work within a MSP environment, a managed services provider environment to start with, because you get a very good broad section of experience. Yeah. So the enterprise side, I suppose, is more about one network, you know, everybody does things the same way sort of thing. Whereas an MSP gives you a broad cross section. There's so many different businesses set up,
different sizes, different problems.
So some are hosted, some are on-prem servers, some are, you know, different software products. You get a greater, you know, breadth of experience. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
fantastic.
From episode 65, Ben Lamb.
So I guess my advice to everybody, you've heard me speak of traveling overseas and taking those risks and those opportunities. If you're working wherever you are and you've been in an industry and someone's willing to back you for something that you think's a little bit bigger than you, then have a bit of faith in yourself. Someone else can see it in you, so have a go. Put your hand up when you don't know. Put your hand up if you make a mistake, but get out there and have a go because you'll never regret it.
And you obviously started, you know, very much with the foundations first. And you mentioned before you very much were a generalist and then sort of later in your career specialised. People are sort of specialising a bit sort of earlier in their career these days.
I think so. I guess I think you're quite right. I think to be a good specialist, you can't be a blinkered specialist. I think the value that our business offers is the fact that we come from a very generalist industrial control system and automation background. We understand those systems. We could take them on if we wanted to do them ourselves, but our speciality is making them work from a communications and security point of view. And I think that's our strength, and I think that's our value for clients, that we do have that understanding and we're not going to push them down a route that's going to cause them pain.
Yeah, good.
And I think the only other bit of advice I give to everyone coming up, particularly in an industry technology game, is something someone said to me a long time ago, said, this game's full of smart people, and if you've got smart people, you can teach them lots of things. There's one thing that's really hard to teach, and it's attitude.
Yes. You have to be coachable, don't you?
Yes, you do.
Then
that makes it very hard. You need to be willing to learn new skills and have a go, but attitude and personality are some of the hardest things to teach or change in a person. So be mindful of it. And it's certainly something that I had to learn along the way. Be thinking about what you're doing, thinking about how you're going to bolt in with that team, how you're going to bring value to that company. At the end of the day, that's why you're there. You're there to make the money. If they're making money, you'll make money.
Thank you for listening to this episode of New Tech People.
To stay up to date with all our episodes, our show notes, and past episodes, please visit www.nuitechpeople.com.au. Thank you.